And welcome back. It may come as a surprise to you, as it did to me, to learn that arts and culture institutions in our region generate almost $500 million a year in economic activity. It's more than just ticket sales. It's the ripple effect of jobs and tax revenue, dollars spent in restaurants, hotel rooms, any number of vendors who service the industry. Equally surprising is the fact that it's a one-way cash flow, pretty much, because of the low level of investment to fund the arts and artists. With me in studio is Laura Callinan. She has St. Louis roots, was an official with the National Endowment for the Arts, and is the founding partner of Upstart CoLab, which is seeking to develop channels to encourage investment in the arts and the artists. Thank you so much for being with us, Laura. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Now, you're a St. Louisan, but you haven't been here in 25 years. Is it something we said?
No, not at all. I really enjoyed going around a little bit yesterday and just seeing the things that are the same, and obviously a lot of building, and a lot of it looks like it's focused and centered in arts and culture. So nice to see what's happened in the time since I've been away.
It really is. I mean, this is a very vibrant community when it comes to that area. Tell me exactly what Upstart is trying to do.
Upstart CoLab is a new national collaboration, and we connect artists, impact investors, and social entrepreneurs. And our mission is to create opportunities for artist innovators to deliver social impact at scale.
Okay. Explain what that really means for me, if you would.
So a social entrepreneur is someone who's really motivated, not by getting wealthy themselves, but using all those techniques that entrepreneurs use in business to do something good in the world, to do something good in their community. And creative people gravitate towards solving problems. So it's not really a surprise that a lot of artists and other creative people work like social entrepreneurs, and they use their artistic aptitudes and imagination and skills and perseverance to address all of the important topics that matter in our communities, whether it's things around the environment, opportunities for kids, opportunities in health, job creation. So a lot of artists are doing that work, but they're rarely acknowledged, rewarded, and understood as being the social entrepreneurs that they are.
Can you give me an example or two of how this has worked and where?
Sure. So near where I live in New York, Aurora Robson is an artist. She works with plastic trash, and she salvages the trash, the plastic, out of rivers and oceans. She cleans it, and she makes it into the most beautiful installations and sculptures. At a distance, you think you're looking at blown glass because it's beautiful colors and very delicate, but then you get up closer and you see that it's Tropicana containers and bottle tops and all kinds of plastic debris. And she works with plastic, and she collects it the way she does from rivers and streams because she's making a point about the effects that plastic have in the environment, on the planet, and to our health. So it's a learning opportunity for the communities where she goes in, does workshops, does this art making. But she, along with a lot of other artists, designers, and architects who also work with plastic debris, they partner up through an organization called Project Vortex with environmental organizations all over the world who also care about the environment and especially our waterways. So that's just an example where she uses what she knows how to do, make beautiful things, as a way to focus our attention and comment on the state of the environment.
Well, I've got a few extra bucks in my wallet, and so what would you suggest that I do with it? And how do I go to someone like your artist friend and say, I can lend you some money, I can give you some money, and help you move along?
So one of the things we're doing at Upstart CoLab is we're connecting arts and the creative economy with impact investors. So impact investors are sort of the funders to the social entrepreneurs. So they want to make an investment rather than a donation.
That venture capitalists, in a sense.
Well, they can be venture capitalists. Yeah. They might be making loans by providing debt investments, but they want to make a return on their money. They're not making a gift, but they're not only trying to make a financial return. They also want to be sure that their money is being used to do something positive in the world. They're investing for a social purpose. They're able to understand what the social return of their money will be, in addition to whatever financial return that they might get. So what we're trying to do at Upstart is create the opportunities for impact investors to deploy their capital into the creative economy. increasingly, impact investing has grown. It's about $8.7 trillion in the United States alone is part of socially responsible investing today. However, it is 0% in the arts and culture sector. And that's just because the products, the funds, and the strategies that have been effective in other aspects of social purpose have not yet found their way to the creative economy. So we're working to change that.
Yeah, I wonder why. I mean, so many dollars are generated by the arts and culture communities. And as I said earlier on, it's kind of a lopsided deal. It's not coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. The creative economy in the United States is $704 billion a year. It's more than 4% of our GDP, of the U.S. economy every year. And that's sort of a low number because that's a number that's prepared by the National Endowment for the Arts. So it focuses a lot on theater and music and dance, those types of artistic disciplines. The creative economy is even bigger because it includes food and fashion and media and design and things that aren't quite in that 4% number. So we know it's investable. And in fact, some research that we did recently demonstrated that to some extent, through community development, investments in creative places and creative businesses have been a little bit flying under the radar. Mm-hmm. So they've been happening, but they haven't been tabulated and recognized for being part of the creative economy. They're classified as affordable housing or community facilities or small businesses, but they haven't been noted for the creative components to them.
How do you bring the two together?
Well, that's what we're trying to do. We think it's really about building bridges and making introductions and connecting the dots. Sometimes it's translating jargon, but for the most part, we think that the artists who are working as social entrepreneurs, the artists who are starting social purpose businesses, they're looking to find their way to meet up with the folks who think about social entrepreneurship and impact investing. And all the tools are there. The people are there. It's just a matter of bringing everybody together.
You know, let's be clear on what we're talking about when we talk about artists. Are we talking about artists who paint, the type who paint pictures, or are we talking about artists who are part of the theatrical world, for instance, or the general arts world?
So we think about artists as innovators and ideators. And so it's really people across a whole spectrum. Some are the folks who paint pictures and play music and act on the stage. And they're a vibrant part, very important part of our communities. We want them to be in our communities. They create a whole cohesion and set of sense of possibility that's important for all of us to be part of. But there are also artists who, as I said, choose to work on particular topics, important social issues. And then there are artists who take their skills and their abilities and decide that they want to start a social purpose business. So just an example, someone who's made that transition, in Columbus, Ohio, Jenny Britton Bauer trained as a painter. She thought she was going to have a creative career through the arts. And it turns out that her mode of expression is ice cream. She is the founder of Jenny's Splendid Ice Creams, delicious ice cream. I saw that there was an outlet at the Central West End when I was taking a walk around last night. And Jenny's figured out that for her, ice cream is the palette for her creativity, the flavors, the tastes, the unusual combinations. But she's also figured out that it's she doesn't want to create just any old ice cream company. She's built an ice cream company that's a certified B Corporation. That means it's a type of company that's decided that they're going to make some money, but they're not going to do it at any cost. They're going to prioritize the situation of their employees. They're going to prioritize how they act towards the environment, and they're going to prioritize being good community citizens. So that's an example where it's pretty clear how you can invest in a company, because it's a company that makes and sells great ice cream and uses its profits in good ways.
It's not like we're talking about things that would require massive investments necessarily.
Well, there's a whole system in place, so you can start small and you can grow big. Another example is Etsy, the platform that allows creative people to make and sell things. It started as a like anything, it started small. It's also a certified B Corporation. It started with some creative people on the founding team. One guy that I know is Matt Stitchcomb. He was the first employee at Etsy. For the 5 years before he joined Etsy, he was a working musician. He toured around the world with his rock band, did very well, and then joined this company to help create a platform for other creative people to make and sell what they do. Etsy started small, gained investment over time, and in 2015, it went public. It's now a publicly traded company. You can go buy a share of stock there. So from little acorns.
Yeah. Does the big tree grow?
Or
something like that. You know, this is going in a little bit different direction than I assumed when I heard you were coming in, because I thought what you were going to be talking about was really funding the arts themselves. By that, I mean funding theatrical organizations who are, you know, in need of money, the grants, the kind of work that the National Endowment for the Arts does, for instance, that sort of thing. That's not part of the package at all, I gather.
So arts organizations actually earn the majority of their income. Mm-hmm. So everyone's always grateful to get a grant from a National Endowment for the Arts or a Ford Foundation or the individual donor who writes a generous check. And there's an important role that philanthropy plays. $17 billion a year of philanthropy in the United States goes to the arts and culture sector. And all the cultural organizations really appreciate that, for sure. But where we're focused at Upstart is really on the artist, the person who's at the heart of all of that. Mm-hmm. Most of the formal philanthropy obviously goes to arts institutions, cultural institutions. And so just like in business, the new ideas, the really creative ideas, they come from the people in the garage, you know, sort of working on a shoestring. I would say that the equivalent in the arts sector is the individual artist, especially the general artist. So we're looking for ways to shine a spotlight on those artist innovators and to create a system so that they can tap into funding for their work. Part of it is just, as I said before, because that's where the money is. Mm-hmm. The $8.7 trillion that's going into social investing, if we can dislodge just a small portion of that, so it's starting to focus on the creative economy, on the arts and culture sector, it's not going to be available to every artist or to everything that's happening in the arts and culture space, but it will leave more philanthropic resources for those activities that will always need to be funded philanthropically. The energy and the passion and the concern that's been channeled to respond to the potential threat to the budget of the National Endowment for the Arts, which is only $148 million. It's less than philanthropy gives to the arts every year. It's certainly less than impact investing has the potential to give to the arts every year. If we can have just a little bit of impact investing money supporting arts and culture, it will take some of the pressure off the ongoing concerns about the funding of the NEA. That's not to say that this country should not have a federal arts agency and that the recipients of NEA grants aren't grateful, find those grants important, but it shouldn't be the only thing that we're depending on in terms of supporting important work in arts and culture across the United States.
Bottom line is, if I have a garage band or a theater group, I shouldn't be coming to you unless members of my group have a particular artistic talent.
That's right. We're really focused on the enabling infrastructure, the ecosystem that will connect the creative economy, arts and culture into this world of social entrepreneurship and impact investing.
All right. It's it's a really, really interesting project. I have a caller here who wants to get into the conversation. Let's bring Susan in. She's calling from Illinois. Susan, please come in. You're on the air with Laura Callanan.
Well, thank you so much. I just wanted to bring forward the situation of a community band in Wood River, Illinois, has been around for in some form or another for about 100 years, but the board decided to budget in a different way this year, and as of now, we have no funding. So I wanted to just put that out there, get the news out. We are hoping that we will find another way. and that we will have a band season. There are about 25 people in the band, 25 to 30 of us.
That's a little off point with what we're talking about, I think, but let's ask Laura if you have any advice for somebody, given your background and your years' experience.
You know, what I've found interesting is how people are using crowdfunding platforms to support such a range of creative activities. And we talked about Kickstarter, I think, a minute ago, and that's an example of a crowdfunding platform that was, again, had artists on the team, founding team. They were solving some of their own problems by creating a way for a wide variety of people to make small donations in support of creative projects. And it's been amazing to me the literally billions of dollars that are flowing through Kickstarter, Indiegogo, and similar platforms that are allowing individuals in small amounts to support the creative work of others. So when I hear a story like the one that the caller just shared, we now have some new ways to reach broadly for support of work in our local communities, even some of our smaller organizations doing creative activities.
I'd like to spend a moment or two going into a little more detail about what happens if the government pulls back on NEA, given your background there. What's lost? What's the impact of reduced funds, sharply reduced funds?
One of the most important things about the funding that the National Endowment for the Arts provides currently is that it's really broadly based. Grants are given in every congressional district across the country. In some ways, it's a response to the question that often gets raised of whether the arts are present mostly in big cities? Is it really accessible to everybody across the country? Is it something that everyone can tap into, regardless of education level, socioeconomic level, et cetera? And having government support, federally sponsored support of this work, I think is a really important signal that arts, culture, creativity, innovation, design, these are things that are important to all of us in all of our communities. Every community, whether it's rich or poor, wherever it's located across the country, has heritage, has its own cultural identity. There are creative people in every community. Creativity can take many forms. It's not always going to be in classical Western music or formal painting. It can be in holiday traditions. It can be in cooking traditions. It can be in storytelling from the elders in the community. And I think one of the most important things having a federal art agency does is remind us that this is part of being in a democracy. Having creative expression is part of having free expression. And that creative people, as I said before, they gravitate towards solving problems. Artists in our communities represent our potential and our ability to solve all of our challenges and seize all of our opportunities.
What brought you into this part of this world?
So the last time I was here in St. Louis, I was here for City Players of St. Louis. It was an off Broadway on the Mississippi, a very creative theater company that was here for more than 50 years. I had the wonderful opportunity of participating towards the end of my time in high school and over vacations and time off throughout college. And it helped me to understand the role that an arts organization can play in a community, and it introduced me to the business side of running an arts organization. So I learned a lot of early lessons that made a big impression on me. And I realize that I'm channeling those lessons into the work I do every day now.
Well, was there an aha moment, an epiphany of some sort that put you where you are right now with Upstart?
Yeah, there was. About 6 years ago, I was having lunch with a fellow named Jim Houghton. Jim was the founding artistic director of Signature Theater Company in New York. And Signature started about 26 years ago. They started by dedicating a full season of plays to a single living playwright each year. And then when they moved into a new space about 6 years ago, they've been able to expand their programming. I had been on Jim's board in the early years. I had seen the growth of Signature Theater over a 20-year period. At the time we were having lunch, they had just broken ground on their new three-theater complex, the Signature Center. He was talking to me about the plans, how the programming was going to be able to expand in the new space with three theaters. And he was just giving me the update of what was happening at Signature. And it was at a moment that I was in the midst of doing a lot of work on social entrepreneurship. I was a consultant at McKinsey & Company. I was doing some work for the Skoll Foundation, which is a foundation focused exclusively on social entrepreneurship. And I was just listening to Jim, and I heard the words come out of my mouth. I said, "Jim, you are what they call a social entrepreneur. But nobody calls you that because you're working in the arts. And you don't call yourself that because you're working in the arts. But, you know, take it from me. I know all these things." And I left that conversation scratching my head, thinking, okay, if this guy were not a friend, would I declare that he was a social entrepreneur? You know, social entrepreneurs are people like Muhammad Yunus, who created microfinance and won the Nobel Prize, or Wendy Kopp, who launched Teach for America, which is now all over the country and around the world. How could I put my buddy in the same category as these other social entrepreneurs? And then I thought, if Jim is a social entrepreneur, is he the exception that proves the rule? Or are there a lot of people in the arts leading in their communities, leading on social change, who are being overlooked? And so that was really the motivation that started me down the path that has turned into Upstart CoLab.
We only have a minute left, but if there's someone listening to us right now who falls into the categories you've just mentioned, what can they do? How can they hook up with you?
So we have a website, upstartcolab.org, upstartco-lab.org. And you can Google that. Would love to hear from you. And just also to encourage you, if you are doing creative work, especially if you're focused on making social change, I think more and more opportunities are opening for you to be able to do that work with support.
I have to bring anything else to the table?
I think
the desire to get it done, right?
The desire to get it done.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Laura Callanan. Very interesting operation that you've got going there. How long have you been in business?
We're a little over 1 year old.
Okay. So you're growing pains, no doubt. Laura Callanan, thank you so much. That is with Upstart CoLab.
Thank you.
Thank you. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.